Adversity? Bring it. The struggle? I welcome it. Snooze on life? Never that. I am Dave Regina, and this is the No Snooze Podcast. Come on. Welcome back, No Snooze Podcast, episode 167. As always, I'm in the booth with the new three. We have Brandon Doss Dossimo.
Yes, sir.
Claudio the Voice Valenzuela. And I am Dave the Body Regina. Brandon is a recording artist, songwriter, and strength and conditioning coach out of Stamford, Connecticut. Heavily influenced by sports and music, Doss made both a part of his future. With over 50 songs created and a loyal fan base of over 1,000 listeners a month, Doss mixes a vibrant pop feel with creative, in-depth verses that bring his songs to life in a unique way. He balances storytelling lyrical rap with a pop harmonizing vibe and everything in between. A battle with mental health was almost the end of Doss's music career. But through perseverance, he has revitalized the love and passion for his art and continues to fight through his ongoing mental health journey. Using his background from a lifetime in athletics, he now coaches players trying to take a similar path, providing them with programs, exercises, as well as strength and conditioning knowledge to excel in their respective sports. Doss is not only a coach, but a mentor to young athletes in the community. It's a pleasure to have you here, my brother. Welcome to the No Snooze Podcast.
Thank you for having me, man. I'm excited.
Awesome. I guess just from the name alone, I can kind of guess, but how did Doss come about?
So it stemmed from the last name, as I'm sure that's what your guess was.
Yeah, yeah.
On the baseball field, they referred to me as Doss. And when I finished baseball and started taking music more serious, I figured I'd carry it over. The two S's come from just me not wanting people to pronounce it as Doc, because it's spelled D-O-C-I-M-O. It's the last name. So I was like, I have to switch this so that they're not calling me Doc. That'd be weird.
Right.
Or not weird, but just not what I wanted to go by.
Gotcha.
As an artist. So I threw the two S's on it, and I was like, this is clean. And Doss.
Yeah, no, I like you, man. I like the logo, too.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. Where's your family? What's your background?
Italian. So, my pops came over when he was 12, 13. I don't know. It changes every time he tells a story. But
did he used to walk in the snow to school, too, with
all
the boots?
That. And all right, it, gotcha. Stories are endless. They're endless.
Yeah, yeah.
But he came over when he was around that age and resided in Stamford ever since. It's where my parents met. It's where I was born and raised.
Very cool. You got siblings and stuff?
Big time. I got one little brother. Shout out to Trav.
Okay, Trav. I see you.
That's my boy.
Who inspired you to make music?
A ton of artists. Honestly, it started with poetry. I really just kind of had a creative side to me. I used to draw a lot. And then during elementary school, we did some type of poetry thing. And it just stuck for me. I just really enjoyed it.
Like you were writing? Like this was an actual activity that you were doing with the teacher, poetry?
Exactly.
Gotcha.
In school. And then I took it outside of school and started to enjoy it. And then, you know, as I met new friends and kind of discovered hip-hop music, then 8 Mile came out and forget about it. That's all I wanted to be was B-Rabbit.
Yeah.
After that. So there's a lot of influences, but I mean, it started just with my creative side, then, you know, the poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And then I listened to music, and what music did for me was inspiring. And I was like, you know, if I could do the same for others, or even if I could do that and just help myself internally, you know, because I loved doing it. It was fun to stay creative, keep my mind working. So in terms of the artists that inspired me when I was younger, obviously Eminem. I was a big Biggie fan. Biggie over Pac. Might get some backlash on that, but Biggie over Pac. Cassidy was one of my favorites. I was a big fan of wordplay back then. So Cassidy was one of my favorites. Ludacris, Nelly.
Was Jadakiss on that list?
Jadakiss, of course, on the list. Fabulous. I mean, we could go on and
on. Yeah,
there's a ton of them, but just off the top of my head, like those are some. And then as we grew, Drake's my number one guy now.
Gotcha.
I started to kind of get more into like the song making as opposed to the wordplay. Mm-hmm. And he incorporates both. But just his versatility is crazy to me.
Yeah. I want you to expand on something for me, if you can. You said
yes,
that,
sir.
You know, what music did to you was inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
give me a little more than that. What I guess was inspiring about it, and how did that become like an outlet for you to then say like, now I want to make music?
Yeah. So in terms of like inspiring, it didn't make me want to go out and do these certain things, but it inspired me because of the way it made me feel. So it inspired me to make others feel that way through what I can create. So music would put me in better moods. Music would, you know, do things for me, get me pumped up for games, for example. And it just has a certain way of touching you during certain times of your life. You know, sometimes you could be sad and a song might hit, but that same song is not going to hit before a game. So being able to, you know, touch on those specific times, I thought that was really cool. So it inspired me to maybe want to do that for other people. And music, a lot of people say that some music saves their lives. You know what I mean? So it even goes to that extent. And if I'm able to do that with, you know, all what's up here, I think that's amazing. Yeah. And again, I still have that creative side, those creative juices for that. So
I know a lot of artists, just even in my own circle, right? Mm-hmm. Dudes I went to college with, DJs, a lot of creative
yeah.
guys.
Yeah.
And everybody is extremely different. But I've noticed that a lot of the people who like to perform are ironically introverted people.
Yeah.
Are you an extrovert or an introvert? And I guess does like the shine and the limelight of performance really reflect the type of person that you are, or is it the complete opposite?
It's a little bit of both. I'm very outgoing. I think I am an extrovert, but I have introverted sides to me as well. I think we all have a little bit of balance of both. Like I love my alone time. But I go out and I'll talk to anybody, you know, social butterfly for sure. I'm out conversating with, you put me in any room, I'll fit in. In terms of the performances, I do agree with you in terms of like a lot of those people that, you know, are out there performing, look like they put on great shows. When they get off that stage, like you see a completely different side of them where it's just like quiet and like, or introverted. For me personally, it's not really about the limelight. It used to be when I was younger, I thought like that was the cool thing. You know, you got to be the man. And as I've grown and matured, I realized like that it's not nearly as important as other things. So I think when I was younger, it was kind of like a part of it, like cool, like people, you know who I am and that stature.
Yep.
But now I don't even really, I mean, a couple performances, I've only done maybe less than 15. I still get nervous during my performance. It still brings me a shit ton of anxiety. I have a performance tonight. I'm nervous for it. But
where's the performance at?
It's in Brooklyn. Okay. Yeah, it's in Brooklyn, New York. So I'm excited, but anxious, and it brings mixed feelings. I have a love-hate relationship with performances. You know, it's kind of like me being a perfectionist. I overthink a lot of things. But once you get off that stage and people are really vibing with you, like it's a great time being up there, like to really experience that and people tapping in and like all the focus is on you.
Right.
It's really cool, but it's also, you know, it's anxious. It's overwhelming at times. So some crowds are better than others. When people are interactive with you, it makes you love that limelight, you know? But then when there's some crowds that aren't as much and they don't seem as interested and they don't give you that energy, it's hard to reciprocate that on stage.
Right.
So it's a little bit of both. I have that mixed feeling, especially about performing.
Yep. Have you ever had a moment where the crowd has been like absolutely atrocious and like literally gave you nothing? Cause sometimes like I think about that too. Yeah. And I've gone to my boys. So a couple of my boys, man, they've been grinding for years.
Yeah.
Like, you know, specifically, Felipe Vargas, who's, he goes by the name of Dimelo Felva out in, Miami. And then True Def, which is my buddy Desmond out of Dallas, Texas, right? Okay. These guys were performing in college when like, you know, their friends were behind them, but to everybody else, they were kind of like struggling artists trying to make it.
100%.
And now these guys are popping. But they had to go through like years and years of like showing up and like, you know, hoping that the crowd gets involved. And I used to be that dude screaming for them because
love
I'm like,
that.
Yo.
We need people like you. But we need people like you.
It always like would, didn't hurt my heart, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm like, damn, I want everybody to be there. And like, I can't imagine being on a stage and people not really rocking. And then eventually once they would get going, of course people get involved, but you know, whether the crowd is a little anxious or just 100%. Quiet or something like that. So have you experienced that?
Yes. There hasn't been like complete silence or like no type of reactions at all. That's like, I might walk off at that point. But I have had performances, and again, I haven't done many. So I'm sure as I do more, like I'll feel more comfortable. I'll kind of see certain things and do things in a different way that will help me. But there's definitely been some where like I see people on their phones and I'm like, damn, I cannot focus on this person. I can't focus on this person because they're, you know, but it does suck. And like, as you said, kind of being on the other side of it, it's like, damn, just a little bit of respect, you know, like it's hard to get up here. I don't know if you'd be able to get up here. Right. You know what I mean? So like, you know, I'm sharing personal stuff that I've, you know, put a lot of time into. Like, I would just appreciate just some acknowledgement. You know, you don't have to be jumping up and down, putting your hands up. But there's definitely been times where I look into a crowd and I'm like, shit. And it's like,
yep.
Energy kind of drops a little bit. And then, you know, you find somebody that is rocking with you, or you kind of just, you have a job to do almost at the end of the day, you know, that when you get up there. And I don't want to look at it as a job because it should be fun. But like when you get up there, you know, you have to bring the energy. They're, you know, they're taking their energy from you. Mm-hmm. You set the tone. So, you know, it's tough. It's tough though.
Especially
not, you know, trying to go out there and prove yourself to these people is what it really is. A lot of people, I have friends that are artists, and I had a conversation with my engineer the other day, and we were talking about how he feels more comfortable in crowds that he doesn't know anybody. And it's the opposite for me. I did a show recently with a bunch of people from my hometown, and I felt nothing. I felt no nerves because I knew it was people who supported me, and I knew it was people who already rock with me. And that was easier for me to get up there and have fun with them. Whereas opposed to when I'm in a crowd that I don't know anybody or they don't know me, I'm nervous because I feel like I have to win them over. So everything has to go well.
Gotcha.
That's where I start to overthink that. So, gotcha. Yeah, it's tough.
How'd you build a fan base like this? Like over 1,000, listen, I mean, we know this is kind of in line with what we do with listens and streams and all that. Yeah. So over 1,000 listeners a month, but not that many performances. How'd you build that?
Shit, I don't know. I'm grateful for the support that I have. A lot of people will talk about how their hometown never really fucked with them. Right, I can curse on here, right?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Just got to make sure. But, you know, their hometown never really fucked with them. And then once they started to blow up, everybody started hopping on the bandwagon. It's the opposite for me. Like, I feel a lot of love from the hometown. I don't know if that's just because of, you know, the person I am to these people. You know, I always try to be a genuine dude. I always, at the end of the day, I want to be a good dude. That's all I want people to say about me. So that's how I move. And maybe off that strength, they started to, you know, support my music. I'm the music I'm putting out is good. They mm-hmm. like the music. Could be a mixture of both. I try to be myself in terms of my content, in terms of my lyrics, in terms of my videos. Like, I'm nobody but me. And I hope that people can resonate with that and be like, yo, he's being true to himself. So I want to support this guy. There's a ton of things that I don't know could have brought the listeners, but at the end of the day, like I'm grateful for it. And 1,000 is going to turn into 1,000,000.
That's right.
That's it.
And
yeah,
you're a humble dude, man. I like that about you.
I appreciate it.
I can pick up on that pretty quickly.
Thank you.
Talk to me about your creative process, what that looks like, right? I know it's different for everybody, but like, what motivates you to create? And then like, do you have to get in the booth? Are you quiet? Are you like blasting music? Like what's the, cause it's similar to a game, right?
Yeah.
100%. Like, you know, I was an athlete growing up too. Yep. So like you have your pregame ritual and that type of stuff. So what does the process look like for you?
So the pregame ritual is the same all the time. You do the same stretches, right?
Which is what?
Same things. Well, in terms of when I was playing sports, I would do the same, you know, the same stretches, the same kind of warm ups, maybe the same songs. However, would get me mentally ready. The music, I like it to be a lot different, and I like it to be very in the moment. I don't want to like premeditate a lot of things because you have to vibe to create the vibe, right? You can't kind of force the vibe. So for me, one day I may be driving down the street and see something that inspires me or gives me a line or two or an idea for a song, and I got to write it down. Next red light, pull out the phone, write it down in my notes. There's other times where I'm at home and I just feel like creating. So I go down into the studio. I have an in-home studio, and I made that because I realized that when I was booking studio sessions or going to studio sessions at a specific time every day, there was times where I'm not creative on Friday at 7 o'clock. You know what I mean? I'm having a long ass day and I don't feel like creating. And so what the in-home studio did for me is at any point in time when I feel creative and I want to let my ideas out, I have that accessible to me. And I was putting a time and a date on my creativity, and you can't do that really. And it started to feel like I was forcing things. I was having a conversation. I'm like, yo, my music feels like homework. I need to get back to recess. And my boy loved that. He was like, yo, you got to keep that. You got to put that. I was like, yeah, maybe I should. But yeah, it's just, it's the creative process is different for every song. There's some songs where I listen to the beat and I have a hook in 2 minutes. There's some songs that takes me 2 weeks to really get something structurally that I like. There's some times where I go in and I kind of like mumble a bunch of bullshit and then I take stuff that I like. There's some times where I want it to be very, very particular on what I'm saying in my message. So I have to really sit down and write with that. You know what I mean? It's really, it's all over the place. And I love it though, because each song is unique to that time period. So the creative process is there's not like one specific for me at least.
Yeah.
I do write a lot of my stuff alone. Sometimes I get distracted, or sometimes I love feeding off people's energy with me, but a lot of the time I write alone. And yeah, it's just based on that either that beat, that time, that day, what I'm going through in my life.
Right.
The creative process is constantly changing. You have to accept that in order to grow as an artist. Hmm. Yeah.
That is fire though. I like the what he said about the like having the specific date and time, how it almost become, right? We could relate to that, right?
It's almost like
homework, but sometimes I guess you have to, because if you're, you know, involved in other things and you have other jobs and stuff like that, but you're trying to build out a side hustle, that could be a roadblock at some point. So you put in that studio in your house is a game changer.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, there's times where, you know, I come home from work or training the kids and I'm just like, I should create a song right now, or there's somebody waiting on a verse for me, but it's not there. And if I'll try, you know, I'll go in and sometimes I'll be 30 minutes of writer's block, can't get nothing out. And then all of a sudden something clicks and then I'm gone. I got a whole record after that. But then there's sometimes where I'm just like, I feel like I'm forcing it and I don't want to force. That's a big thing for me, is I try not to force anything. Especially not with my music, especially not with my music.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
You said it twice now. You said it once off air and then once on air, the word of overthinking.
Overthinking, yeah.
Right?
So, overthinker.
So yeah, you said that. Dive into that a little bit, I guess, and how you deal with the just overthinking in general. I think a lot of people can relate to that.
Absolutely.
And I think, I mean, me personally, right, when I overthink, sometimes it cripples me, man, because you just sit there and you're creating, like, stress really isn't a real thing, right? Yeah. Like, we create stress off of potential outcomes that we believe these situations to be.
Literally.
Right?
Yeah.
So how do you deal, I guess, in bouts of overthinking, and like, have you found ways to manage to get through it?
Yeah. I overthink literally everything. My outfit coming here, overthinking.
Fire outfit, bro.
Thank you.
Good choice. Yeah.
I got a huge closet. I got like three of them in my house. My brother has one little ass closet. I feel bad, but he's all right with it. So you know what? But I overthink everything. Especially, again, relating back to the music. You create outcomes, like you said, and that's tough not to do, because, you know, you obviously want things to go your way. And sometimes, majority of the things that you are putting these outcomes for are out of your control. And I've been working on trying to let go of things out of my control and do the things that are in my control. So if that means practicing more for a show, that I can worry about. The crowd's reaction, I can't. Same with sports. You can prepare, you can get all your reps in. You can't change the calls that the refs are going to make, right? Things are out of your control. I guess being an athlete and always striving to have like excellence in sports kind of carried over to like everything else. So like I always want to be the best at what I'm doing, not in competition with anybody else, just like I want to do the best that I can in this. So that's creating a lot of overthinking for me. I've been doing a lot of meditation. That's helped. Trying to, you know, learn things through that can help my mind get off the anxious or the overthinking thoughts. Sometimes just being busy helps me. Sometimes getting in the gym, You know, just there's a ton of things that can help. There's nothing really in particular that I could pinpoint that I'm like, every single time I feel like this is what I do. You know what I mean? Sometimes you just have to understand that the thoughts are going to come and go. 5 minutes, you know, you're feeling anxious. Yep. 15 minutes later, you might feel great. I have days where I feel like shit all day, then 3 days where I feel amazing. And then I wake up and I have no idea why I feel like shit, or mentally I'm drained or overthinking, yep. but that's just how it goes. And you have to kind of keep pushing and, dealing with these situations and putting myself in stressful situations, right? For example, more performances. Sometimes I don't want to do it. I'm learning from them and I'm growing from them. So it's really about the growth, man. Yep. We learn through experience. And yeah, that's the biggest thing that's been helping me.
This episode is sponsored by Light Crafters, your professional Christmas light installers. Are you tired of spending countless hours untangling Christmas lights, climbing ladders, and struggling to create that perfect holiday ambiance? Look no further. Light Crafters is here to transform your home into a winter wonderland with their professional Christmas light installation services. At Light Crafters, they understand the importance of creating a magical atmosphere during the holiday season. Their team of skilled and experienced installers are dedicated to bringing your vision to life, ensuring that your home stands out as the epitome of festive cheer. Why choose Light Crafters? Here's what sets them apart. Expertise. Their team consists of highly trained professionals who have mastered the art of Christmas light installation. With years of experience under their belts, they know the best techniques and have an eye for detail, guaranteeing a flawless display every time. Customization. They believe that every home is unique, and your Christmas light display should reflect your personal style. Their designers will work closely with you to understand your preferences and create a customized plan that perfectly complements your home's architecture and landscape. A hassle-free experience. Say goodbye to the stress and frustration of dealing with tangled lights and malfunctioning bulbs. Light Crafters takes care of everything, from design and installation to maintenance and takedown. Sit back, relax, and let them handle the hard work while you enjoy the magic of the season. This Christmas, let Light Crafters be your go-to professional Christmas light installers. Contact them today to schedule a consultation and let the team bring your holiday dreams to life. You can find them on Instagram at LightCraftersNY. Don't forget to tell them that you're a friend of the No Snooze podcast. Now, back to the epi.
In your bio, you spoke a little bit about mental health battles, right? Where did that, I guess, when was the first time that you like acknowledged mental health? Because nowadays, it's such a serious topic.
Huge.
But also at times, I feel like some people don't really know what it means specifically. And I think it's different for everybody.
Absolutely.
Like I've shared plenty of times on the podcast, you know, a form for me back in the day where I thought it was just like a little bit of anger was actually like a mental health issue. Like for me to bottle something up, and get so crazy and then turn around and punch a wall, like,
yeah,
that's not too healthy.
No, right? Absolutely not.
So I think there's different forms, but what was it for you? And then kind of talk me through that, that journey.
Yeah, I think it's crazy now that I have an understanding of it and have a grasp of it and know what I go through with my mental health. I was probably dealing with it before I understood it or before I could pinpoint it as mental health or label it as mental health. But the first time I really was aware of it, it was during COVID. I was sitting home and doing nothing really. I was playing video games, making music. Couldn't even work out at the time. I injured my back. So that's a huge part of my life. Being social is also a huge part of my life. So it really could have been all the things that were going on. But I made it about me, about my music. But I was just sitting there and just had a panic attack out of nowhere. Just hearts racing.
Have you ever had one before?
No. I don't think. I tried to look back and like, okay, there's been times where I've been very anxious or maybe it was like the start of one or a small one, right? But nothing from what I experienced at that time. And I had to get up out of my house. I walked for like an hour, calm my body down. But it was something that I never experienced before. So I didn't know how to handle it. And then the next day, another one, you know what I mean? And then it kind of started to just make me feel crazy internally. You know what I mean? I'm like, what's going on with me? I thought there was something wrong with me because I didn't know how to handle it. I've never experienced it before. And not that I ever knocked it, but again, some people kind of just overlook it because they haven't been through it maybe, or they just don't understand it. And I didn't at that time, and I, you know, I'm still learning about it. But that was the first time during COVID that I really was aware and started to like take action. It took me like 3 months to even have a good week. You know what I mean? Where I was talking to my friends, I was talking to my parents, and I was like, I don't know what's going on. I don't know how to change this. I don't know how to fix this. I don't know how to help it. It was tough for me, and it just made me overthink a lot of things. I started to question everything that I had. I had a roof over my head. I had income from, you know, my job that was the government, however they were paying us out. I had food. I had family. I had friends. I had all the things that, you know, like you should feel safe with. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't feel safe. I just didn't feel like myself. And that's what was killing me too. I didn't really know where it was stemming from.
Right.
And I attached it to my music because I'm like, this is the only thing that's really causing me stress at this point in time, playing Call of Duty with my homies. This is not the reason for it. You know what I mean? So I attached it to my music, and I took a break from music. As I, you know, put in a bio, mm-hmm. we read and spoke about, I took a break from music cause I attached it to that. And I was like, you know, music is causing this. But yeah, it was a scary time, man. It was a scary time.
I think for a lot of people, and they could definitely relate.
Yeah.
You know? Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And like you said, like the overthinking is crippling, and my anxiety led to overthinking, and, you know, it started to cripple me in terms of music, mm-hmm. and then in terms of me like wanting to be out. Like I didn't want to do anything. Like I was in a small state of depression. Like I'm always the person like, yo, let's try and do this. Let's try and do that. And my boys are hitting me up for certain things, and I'm like, I don't even want to go. Like I don't have any can't think of the word.
Motivation.
I just wasn't there. And that's when I knew, you know, all right, something's wrong. Started to take action, and still fighting it today. You know, I still have a ton of anxious thoughts all the time. But
you talk to anybody specifically? Like, have you done therapy?
I did therapy. I think it was towards the end of that year, 2020, mm-hmm. When I was like, I need to do something because whatever I'm doing right now is not working, and I don't know how to handle it. So, yeah, I did therapy, but it was over the phone, which sucks for me.
Yeah.
I'd rather be in person. Like I want to feel somebody's energy. Yep. I want them to reciprocate energy that I'm giving them. So over the phone, it didn't really help me. I did 5 sessions, and I started to get better, kind of doing things on my own, meditating, reading up on things. Therapy, I want to go back. Mm-hmm. And I'm in a much, much, much better place, but I still know that it can benefit me. Right. To this day.
Yeah, yeah.
So I do want to go back. I haven't taken the action to try and find somebody that works for me. But that one time that I did it, it was nice to talk to somebody, but it didn't feel like he really understood
connected.
Me. Yeah, we didn't connect. Yeah. So I did that. I went to the doctor. I got Lexapro because I went to him, asked him, you know, what's going on? What is it? Blah, blah, blah. What can we do? First thing he said was, you know, I have medicine. I'm like, I don't want it. I really don't like being on medicine or feel like I need to rely on it. Mm-hmm. Not saying that it's wrong. It's just me. So I denied it at first. I pushed it off, and then it got to a point where it's like, I need something. So I got on that. I'm finally off of it. So definitely happy that I was able to work off of that. But yeah, that's kind of the path that I've been down. Mm-hmm. Needed a life jacket. You know what I mean? Where it was crippling. Yeah. It was killing me. It's killing me.
I would say though, like just from my own personal experience, right? I haven't done the virtual therapy thing, mm-hmm. but I've done like the in-person thing, and mm-hmm. I'm a big proponent of it. It's been like over 6 years now. But I've happened to find somebody who I can really relate, connect to.
Yeah.
I would encourage you to find it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, even for me, like I'm a dad, you know, businessman, mm-hmm. like we've got a lot going on in mm-hmm. life. And finding somebody who you can actually like talk to and that is not judgmental of your situation
100%
is huge.
Yeah.
And sometimes it can't be your friend or somebody in your direct circle because you're just not comfortable exposing that. But when I tell people all the time, I'm like, seek that in-person opportunity, mm-hmm. but also it's a business too. So like these therapists, right? No knock to therapists, but of course they're going to want to take the phone call
yeah,
and get that, you know, same dollar that they'd get in person.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it's been life-changing to find somebody. So I would say, you know, continue to try to find it.
Yeah, yeah. No, I've heard the same from many, many people. And unfortunately, when I needed it most, it was
not available.
In the midst of COVID. So it was not available to be in person. So, you know, I settled for the phone call, which helped. You know, I'm not saying that it was pointless.
Yep.
It definitely helped in a sense, and I'm glad that I got that experience, but I'm definitely seeking that in person. And like you said, sometimes you tell your friends, and I opened up to a ton of my friends, and that actually helped me a lot because I realized a lot of them were going through shit worse than I was.
Right.
And I'm like, I couldn't even tell. And it made you feel a little bit better about your situation. Unfortunately, you're the only person going through it. So when people tell you, you know, certain things that may have worked for them, doesn't mean it's going to work for me. Right. I had to find my own, you know, things that kind of relieved that feeling for me. But yeah, opening up to the friends was nice, but at the same time, like, they partially understand.
You know what's funny about that too? Like, something that I see in my circles, like, you know, I hold my best friends real close to me. But there's so much, we could do so much better about really checking in.
100%.
Versus like some of the conversations that we just have. Like, we as men kind of almost avoid like these uncomfortable conversations amongst each other. Whereas you could be best friends with somebody and really not know what the hell is going on in their life.
I know.
You know, so we got to do better with that. And I think just even, you know, as men, but I'm sure as women, but women are more, I guess, society. It's more of a norm for mm-hmm. women to talk amongst women.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like, you know, I've been trying to talk to people and take this platform and make it a comfortable space for men, especially to come in and have conversations. Cause I think it's powerful and impactful.
100%.
In terms of impact, how'd you get into, you know, I know it's from the passion of sports, but like, you know, mentoring young kids and kind of working with them via strength and conditioning. How'd you get into that?
Yeah, so I've always been into my personal health, researching things of the body, making myself a better athlete, a better performer, stronger, certain things. So I took a passion to it just from wanting to, you know, improve my health. And I got out of school with an accounting degree. I'll never do accounting. I never will. It's not me. I can't sit behind a desk.
Yeah.
I don't know why I took that path. My pops is an accountant, so it kind of like steered me that way. And honestly, I wasn't worried about school when I was in college, man. All I wanted to do was play baseball and party, and you know what I mean?
Where'd you go to college?
I went to Southern Connecticut.
Gotcha.
I wanted to go further, but the recruitment was difficult to get, you know, teams from down south or Cali or wherever, these places that I dreamed about going.
Yep. So you played baseball at Southern?
I played baseball at Southern, and baseball was the priority for me. So mm-hmm. not going to like the dream school or the dream location that I wanted to, I sacrificed that just to play.
Just to play,
yeah. But yeah, so I came out with a degree in accounting, and I got a sales job for WB Mason, outside sales. Worked for my personality, right? I can go out and talk to whoever. You know, my clients loved me, and I was doing well there. When COVID happened, they furloughed everybody, and me and Phil, as well as our boy Jeff, who had a basketball background. He was a coach. He had a bunch of clients that he trained one-on-one. And then my buddy Chris Evans. I'm not sure if you know,
yeah,
Chris.
Know Chris. Yeah. Yep.
So we were all sitting in his backyard, and they started to talk about how they can bring their clients to a place where they can still train during the shutdown of everything. And Phil had a tennis court in his backyard, turned that into a basketball court, made a summer camp for all these kids. So we called it One Up. They called it One Up. Jeff had the whole idea and kind of just brought it to the table, and it all worked. And I was just there, you know, pretty much as a help. And it was something for me to do. I was always at Phil's anyways. We were kicking it by the pool, just relaxing during, you know, once things became acceptable, at least to be around other people.
Yep.
We were always there kicking it anyways, and I would just go and help and help. And I started to really like being around the kids, really helping them, giving them the knowledge that I learned, through my experiences in the weight room in college, or, you know, based on the research that I did. And it was just, it seemed like a calling, and it seemed like it happened for a reason.
Yep.
Once things started to open up again, I found myself in a gym, started bringing some kids there to continue training. And from there, it just became a career. And now I'm working on a certification. I'm trying to get my CSCS. Mm-hmm. So I'm going for the big boy. But yeah, I don't know. It just became a passion. And I was always, again, interested in myself. I was in the gym daily for myself.
Yep.
And, you know, getting that relationship, seeing the kids really want to get better, seeing the kids really want to improve. And then when they do, they brag about it to you as if like you, you know what I mean? Yeah, you did that. Like, yo, coach, I caught my first dunk.
Yeah.
Thank you. You know what I mean? Like, it's a great feeling. It's very rewarding. So it was, you know, fulfilling inside. And yeah, I stuck with it. And now I love it. And, you know, once I get that certification, who knows where I could go with it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, man.
What similarities in work ethic do you apply, I guess, both in the strength and conditioning world and then on the performance side of things?
Performance in terms of music?
Yeah.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I've been asked this question before, and what I took from sports really was learning how to deal with an L, because you're not winning all the time. And with music, you're definitely not winning all the time. You know what I mean? There's a lot of things that people don't see that we have to go through that feel like L's in the music side. And, you know, you put something out and you think it's going to blow up. Yo, this is the best song I've gotten. Doesn't do nearly as well as something that you kind of just let go because it was just sitting on the hard drive, right? So taking that that mindset of it and learning how to kind of take an L, move forward, was a huge connection that they had. But in terms of the work ethic, I mean, you have to put the work in to see the progression, right? And you have to put the work in terms of the music to stay in front of people. If you drop a song every 6 months, people aren't really going to tune in. Mm-hmm. You know, they might like that song. They'll listen to it when you drop it. Yeah. But unless you're Drake, unless you're J. Cole, unless you're these guys that are at the top right now, you can't disappear for years or however long you want. So you kind of have to stay consistent. And that's the same thing with the performance side. If you stop working out, your performance is going to drop in, you know, your field, whether it's basketball, whatever sport it is, like, you know. I know you understand, like, you know, you stop working out, you see the
right.
You know?
Yep.
So it's as simple as consistency, man. Consistency and trying new things with music. But the correlation is definitely there. You have to put the work in to get what you want.
Is there a moment for you that you heavily regret in your life thus far? You're 30 now, right?
Yeah, 30.
So you're just getting to the sweet spot now, my brother. Let me tell you.
Yeah, shit. Sweet spot. But, my knees don't feel too sweet.
But, yeah, is there a moment for you where you're like, you know, either very grateful to be where you're at now or a major regret of, you know, something that's gone on for you?
Not a major regret. There's small things. I really try to live with no regrets. I don't believe it either.
I gotta be honest with you, bro.
I always say it, and I know. I said that very, like, you know, tiptoe-y.
I'll preface this, right? And I have not shared this on the podcast ever. So a major regret of mine.
Okay.
I was drinking far too much. Far too much.
Mm-hmm.
I end up leaving a location and I drive 45 minutes, right? And I'm heading home and I happen to say, you know what? Let me stop at the bar, right? I've been drinking all night, like probably a great thing to just go to the bar.
What's another drink?
Yeah. So I go there and I'm banged up, man. And I take a sip of this drink and something comes over me where I'm like, I'm just going to walk out with this drink. So I actually walk out of the bar with a drink and I put it in my cup holder and I leave the bar and I make a left. Woo,
Science.
Woo, woo,
woo.
I'm like, holy shit. And my whole life really flashed before my eyes because this was after I've already like had some level of success in business and like commissioner at the time. And like, this is not too long ago by any means.
Yeah.
And in that moment,
I was like, wow, dude, you just potentially screwed up your entire life.
That shit away.
Cop comes to the window, looks at the open drink, tells me to put my hands on the steering wheel, and he'll be right back. Now I'm sweating, obviously.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And I'm like, yo, this has to be the biggest regret of my life. Long story short, I end up getting very lucky because I have a couple badges that are with me. Mm-hmm. But they ended up having to call some people that I'm still embarrassed to this day because I had to park the car, get an Uber home. And like, thank God, because that could have went completely different. But absolutely, for people who say like they don't have regrets in life, that's a major regret of my life.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
an embarrassing moment, you know? So I'm just trying to give you context to like what I mean by
yeah,
that.
No, I've never really put myself in a situation like that. Fortunately,
you're much smarter than I am.
I honestly feel blessed too, because there's definitely been some situations where I've just avoided that could have went sideways. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, for whatever reason, I always seem to avoid, and not intentionally, but God's just putting me in these positions to keep me out. It's got to be, you know, it's got to be a sign. It's something. And again, I said that very cautiously because, of course, I regret a bunch of things. But I really can't pinpoint anything like that. I've been arrested one time, and it was mischief night. We're going around throwing eggs, paintballing shit. Yeah, and not getting into detail.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, we got. That was the only time, and you know, I did what I had to do. I was in high school. I was a junior in high school.
Good.
So
thank God.
Yeah, thank God. So you know, I went through some processes to like you know, have nothing on my record and anything like that, and it wasn't like a big arrest or anything like that. But they took us into the holding cell. My dad came, picked me up, wanted to kick my ass probably in front of the cops, which I'm surprised he didn't. But something like that is the closest, but I, right off the top of my head, man, I can't like pinpoint anything that I like have a major regret.
Mm-hmm. What about an adverse moment in your life? I'm always interested, just me personally, right? Like, you know, the no snooze mindset lifestyle is like, you know, either going back to sleep on your dreams and aspirations or waking up and attacking things. And a lot of that has to do with overcoming, you know, adversity and adverse moments in your life. So is there something you can think of, whether it's somebody close to you or an experience that you've had that you've been able to like get over that? Like,
yeah, I had two moments now when you say it that way. One was baseball, going to college. There was, I guess I was hearing doubts from outside circles, not the inner circle, but of me being like, yo, I want to go play D1 baseball. I'm a Division I player. And there was a lot of, you know, talk, and I had a couple of D3 schools that I could have went to. I took a couple visits, and I just didn't want to settle. Something inside told me, don't settle for that. And Southern is a Division II school, so I ended up at a Division II school. But they were ranked third in the nation for Division II when I went there. Mm-hmm. And I didn't take any of the visits, or I didn't accept any of the offers or, you know, on the visits that I had, because I just felt something internally that was telling me, like, reach for more. And that's when the Southern opportunity came, and the opportunity wasn't set in stone either. I walked on to Southern, and they had a team that was completely returning. Every single starter, I'm pretty sure, was returning, with maybe select few. But third in the nation, and the coach told me, you can try to walk on. We have a spot. Can't promise anything. Mm-hmm. And I bet on myself, and I went there, and I ended up making the team. And crazy story on how I ended up starting the first game of the season as a freshman, but I did, and I had a great career after that.
Well, you got to share the story now.
I got to share the story now. All right, cool. So I went there, tried out, and I was a shortstop. So I tried out at short, did my thing. I had a really good tryout. And again, the coach already, you know, knew who I was, and my name already, you know, was ringing bells for him. So I get there, tried out at my normal position. He asked me, have I ever caught before? Absolutely not. And do I want to? Absolutely fucking not. But I'm like, no, I haven't. Why? Do you need a catcher? He's like, well, we might need some help in the bullpen, blah, blah, blah. He's like, go grab some gear. I just want to see a couple. So I put fucking catcher's gear on for the first time ever. And I'm catching these, like, you know, kids who are potentially going to pitch in college, right? So I get behind the plate. There, now it's the pitchers are going through their tryout. We've kind of got the positional players out the way. Now the pitchers are warming up and they're throwing. So I get behind the plate, and the kid gives me the fucking curveball sign. I'm like, you got to be fucking kidding me. The first first pitch I'm about to see is a curveball. So he throws it and it's in the dirt. And just my natural reactions of being an infielder, I kind of like picked it up real smooth. And I thought to myself, no fucking way. This dude probably thinks I can catch. And this is not where I want to be behind the plate. So after the tryout, he said, listen, you know, you did a great job. Again, we spoke already. I'd love to have you on the team based on me finally seeing you play. Like, I think, you know, you have a spot here. But you're going to need to do a little bit of catching. I'm not going to put you in a game, but like bullpen, you're going to have to help out. And I'm like, honestly, whatever. I came this far. Yeah. I bet on myself to be on this team. I was like, let's do it. You know, I'll help wherever I can. I'm a freshman. You know what I mean? On a number three ranked team in the league, I'm probably not going to play anyways.
Yep.
I'm like, I just want to be on a team at this point. And then I know that my work ethic will show and I can get myself to the spot that I want to be at. So catching in practices. And then after I catch a little bit, I'll take my reps at third after my knees are shot. I can't even move, but I'm still trying to take my ground balls. I'm staying after to take my ground ball reps. So they moved me to third. I was a shortstop. They moved me to third. The shortstop was an absolute stud. So moved to third. I was the backup third baseman. So the third baseman was having trouble in the classroom. His grades weren't where they needed to be. So when the season came around, he was not eligible to start the first 4 or 5 games, I think it was. So he had like a suspension. So in my mind, I'm the next man up. But they took a recruit who was a second baseman, ended up being my boy, absolute stud also. Moved him to third, put him in front of me to get the reps. And he was going to be the starter. I'm completely fine with that. You know what I mean? And he's my boy, too. So, like, I'm rooting for him, too. I'm not that kind of, like, oh, I'm pissed off now. You know what I'm saying? Although, am I still trying to outwork you? 100%. That's just how I go. It don't matter if we're best friends. I'm still trying to bust your ass. But me and him are sharing the reps at third during the practices. And drug test comes along.
No, boy.
This dude fails his drug test because he's smoking. So, I'm the next man up. Like, and I'm like, you can't put anybody here anymore. Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? What are you going to do now? So he pulls me into the office and I already knew because me and him are super tight. But of course, I wanted to act like I didn't.
Right.
Like I didn't know he was smoking, none of that. So coach pulls me in. He's like, hey, I don't know if you know, but, you know, this person failed their drug test. And it's Philly D calling me right now, actually. he's like, this person failed his drug test. He was like, so, you know, we're going to need you to step up. I was like, I've been waiting for this. I was like, coach, you think I want to be catching? I was like, yeah, no, that's why I'm staying after and taking these reps. So first 4 games come and I'm the starter on first 4 games, number 3 ranked team in the nation.
Wow.
And my first 4 games, I killed it. I was laying down sacrifice bunts, which coaches love, making diving plays at third. Like it couldn't have went better. And I ended up starting, I think maybe like 5 more games, a couple more games after that. So like, if the third baseman needed, you know, rest or, you know, he was hurt at any point in time, like I'd be the guy to step in.
Yep.
I ended up batting like 285, home run off the scoreboard at home. Had a great freshman year.
Yep.
Just based on me taking advantage of the opportunity I was given. And then the next year I was, you know, I was the starter and, you know, played ever since. But it was, a cool story of just
that
me.
Is, right? Yeah. Yeah. Because you were not number one. You were not number two. Nah. You might not have even been number three.
Yeah.
But you stayed in it.
They didn't have a fucking choice.
Yeah.
And I was, like I said, I was getting out of bullpens. I mean, I'm catching like one of the best pitchers in the nation for Division II at this time. Throwing curveballs, balls that are, that's, you know, fastballs that are, I'm like, I'm jumping out of the way of curveballs. Like I'm not learning how to block these things. Right. And I'm like, am I ever going to be in a game? He's like, no. So I was just like, all right, I'll do my best. Right. But I swear there were some times where I just jump out of the way and then it hits the back net. So we have like, you know, the little cage.
Wow.
I'm jumping out of the way of fucking curveballs because they're just, I've never seen anything like it. You know, being a hitter and being a catcher, it's similar, but it's not the same.
Right.
I was leaving with seam marks all over my arms. I was leaving with ice bags on my knees. But I was still staying after, getting my reps in. And the opportunity presented itself, and I took advantage. That's awesome. So, it was pretty cool.
Now, do you – so hearing that story, a great story.
Yeah.
Do you teach that to your kids in terms of, like, you know, just – because it's hard. When kids especially, you're good at something, right? You always want – we want instant gratification, you know. But nowadays, it's very hard to really – instill delayed gratification and the importance of like working towards a goal to kids.
Yeah.
So how do you take your story and kind of inspire them to like, you know, just stay in the game and wait for their
their moment
or their opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I've specifically told maybe one of my clients
the actual story.
I definitely should. Sure. But I just let them know, you know what I mean? You have to stay ready. I mean, how many times do we hear it? You know, how many times do we see it? You guys watch your favorite players or players that are in the NBA that you aspire to be. And, you know, they get traded to a different team with a new opportunity. Then they become an all-star and then they get paid. They get their contract. Then they, you know what I mean? You have to understand that it's not going to happen instantly. Like you said, I have a kid who I just spoke with a couple of days ago who made JV. He's a sophomore. And he made the JV team and he's probably going to split time. And he's like, which is good and bad. Mm-hmm. I was like, what's bad about it that he's going to split time? And he's just like, yo, you know, well, we're going to play on JV and then we're probably not going to play on varsity. But, you know, we're going to be, you know, maybe tired from the JV games, or it's kind of like it's a balance of both and they're two different teams. And I was like, listen, the fact that you're on that varsity team means you have an opportunity.
Reps.
You don't know what's going to happen. Somebody could get hurt. Somebody could be playing poorly. You might get in for just 2 minutes of the game because somebody needs a rest, but hit one of the biggest shots. Next thing you know, they want to give you, you know, another chance. Mm-hmm. And then you take advantage of that chance. I told them it's not a bad thing that you're on both. I said, do your thing on JV. Learn from what you're, you know, going through on JV. Play your games. Work on your, you know, your game, whatever you need to work on, whatever coaches are telling you, you need more post work, more whatever it is. So work on that in JV. Then when you get your opportunity, if it comes, you're already in the position. If you're not on the varsity team at all, you don't have that opportunity. Mm-hmm. You're just going to be balling on JV. You're just a good JV player. At least you're in the position to have an opportunity. You have to look at it like that.
Right.
Is what I was telling him specifically. And I just let them know, like, you know, whenever do you kind of go to practice, you work on your jump shot one time, now all of a sudden you're shooting 50%. Mm-hmm. Don't work like that.
No.
It don't work like that. You know how much reps you have to put in.
Yep.
So I just kind of try to remind them that, you know, even with the weights, you know what I mean? Yeah, you're at 135 bench pressing now or whatever, 135 deadlifting now, and you're not about to put another 45 pounds on today, but we're going to gradually work to that. And you've seen the progression over just 3 weeks. We're already up 10 pounds in 3 weeks. It's a big deal. So you just gotta, you know, they're stubborn, man. These kids are stubborn, dude.
We see it all the time.
Yeah, they're stubborn. Yeah. So you just gotta kind of stay on top of them. And there's times where I know my kids are like, dude, shut the fuck up. Like I annoy them, but like, I've been there. You know what I mean?
Of course.
So I'm just trying to help in the best way that I know how. And you know, I hope they see that.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You gotta just keep reminding them.
Yep. This episode is brought to you by Hudson Valley Teeth Whitening. Hudson Valley Teeth Whitening is an experienced teeth whitening salon where you can get up to 7 shades lighter with just a 60 or 90 minute session in a professional and relaxing setting. They offer the most superior product coupled with the highest quality of customer service available to get you instant results. Whether you have an important event to attend, such as a wedding, birthday, anniversary, interview, or you are just unhappy with the color of your teeth, this LED light technology helps whiten your teeth fast and easy. At Hudson Valley Teeth Whitening, they understand how important your smile is to you. And speaking from personal experience, you'll be guided by highly efficient staff in a relaxing environment to reach your desired shade. Let them know you're a friend of Dave's from the No Snooze podcast and connect with them at HudsonValleyTeethWhitening.com or on Instagram at HVTeethWhitening. Now, back to the epi.
I'm going to take you somewhere completely different off of a conversation that we had off air. How'd you get into traveling, man? And what does the national park system do for you?
Oh, man, the traveling has opened my eyes up so much to life in general. I've always wanted to travel and see different things. I love new experiences. So when it was me playing baseball every day, it would be like, oh, let's try this new food spot, me and my boy. Like, I just, for whatever reason, I love to have new experiences. When things are the same, they're boring. You know what I mean? So I was never able to travel because of baseball. We were always, you know, like spring break, all my boys are out, Cancun, wherever they are, DR partying, and I'm like waking up like 6 a.m. I got to go, you know, practice. So I always told myself, like, when this isn't a thing anymore, I want to go experience some of these things that I've been missing out on, that I felt like I was missing out on. And I don't say that in a, like a regretful or bad way, because I'm sure they'd, a lot of people would rather be in my position. And what sports did for me has changed my life for the better. But I always told myself, like, man, I'm seeing all this, and like I want to get these experiences too. So as soon as I was done with baseball, I was like, I want to start traveling a little bit. First trip I took was to Cancun, spring break. I was like, finally, I'm getting this spring break experience. It was fucking awesome. Like 14 of my boys, great time. And just to kind of get out the country and see like blue water on a really nice beach and be around that, I was like, right, this is cool, but I know there's more. So I would take, you know, small trips, nothing too crazy. Right before COVID, I had a Europe trip with another like 13 of my boys, and seeing a completely different lifestyle was really cool to me. So seeing how I went to Amsterdam, Florence, and Barcelona. So we did three different spots, and, you know, all have their specific things that are unique to them. But that was really cool to experience that. So that really drove me to want to see more and experience different cultures after I went to Europe. And then the national park thing, it was during COVID, me, my brother and my boy Donica, one of my really good friends, we're sitting in my house and we're like, dude, this has been terrible. We've been constrained. Like, we're locked down. Like, you know, now that things are starting to free up a little bit, let's take a trip somewhere. And the hotels were still, you know, iffy about, you know, room. It was just a nightmare, right? As everybody knows. And we were like, we got to be outside somewhere. We have to do something that, you know, we're not close to people. National park got brought up. Yellowstone is like the one that everybody fucking, the one that everybody knows. That's the most popular one. So we're like, yo, let's go to Yellowstone. Because we all were active. We're all athletes and we love hiking. We've hiked before, but around here. So we're like, you know, how cool would it be to go out there and, you know, just be outside? We don't have to worry about COVID, really. Whatever. We wear a mask while we're on the trails. No big deal. But like, you know.
Did you actually wear a mask on the trails?
Absolutely not.
All right, good.
No,
I was gonna say, dude, you got to leave the podcast now.
Yeah. No, absolutely not. And it's crazy that like when we got to Montana, it just COVID like didn't really seem like a thing. Right, yeah. I mean, like it was because like, you know, they had to put signs up in these restaurants. And again, hotels are like a little iffy about shit. Because they have to be, right? Their business is following laws that they imported. But like, yeah, it was just a thought, and we made it happen, and we were getting paid sitting at home. So we were like, fuck it, we're gonna get paid on vacation. Let's just go for 2 fucking weeks. Fuck just going to Yellowstone and coming back. Like let's really have a trip. So we did Yellowstone, Grand Tetons, Yosemite, Grand Canyon, and Zion.
Oh wow.
All in one trip. While hitting Cali, we hit San Fran, LA, and San Diego. So we kind of did the coast as well, PCH. Yep. And
PCH driving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, sir. That's my guy.
So now you're up to 20 national parks.
I'm up
parks
to 20. So that kicked it off.
That's pretty
and
dope.
It was literally COVID. So, you know, COVID was... We were taking trips and we wanted to do like the Cancuns where we're partying and we're still younger. And you know what I mean? Like we're kind of like, I wasn't fresh out of college and then, but I was still in that mindset where like Miami trips were cool. You know what I mean? Like going and popping bottles in the clubs.
I know those
as well. Yeah. Yeah. So like, and to kind of like be forced to take a trip like that was a blessing in disguise because man, all we did was hike, be in nature. Kind of experience different things. I'm eating like a bison burger out in Montana. I'm like, when the hell? I never thought I'd be doing this.
Yep.
So it really opened my eyes to what is really out there. And I'm still in the U.S., which was really cool. And some of the waterfalls and like the mountains and like there, you can't even really
something about
you can't
nature,
show
though, right?
people a picture and. And it doesn't do it justice, man. Mm-hmm. It doesn't. Like, I'm trying to explain the trips to my boys, and I just can't. I'm just kind of like, you see the pictures, and they look really cool, but it doesn't compare.
And there's something
to
be said about living in the moment, right?
Yeah,
while you're outside in nature.
100%.
Like,
yeah.
For me, I live on the lake, right? Like, small lake. I mean, Mohegan Lake in Yorktown. But to me, it's like, you can't even explain this experience. When I sit on this float, and I just, I don't need my phone. I just hear like, you know, little ripples or the kids going by or something or whatever it is. But something about nature is just like, we got to do more of it. And what technology does today, I mean, there's a lot of good to technology, but
a lot of good,
there's a lot of bad too. 100%. You know, we need to get back outside and be doing these types of things. So I love that.
Yeah, yeah. Nah, the experiences, again, I've been to 20 now, and they're all different.
Yeah.
Did some in Florida that are 95% water. Did some in Washington that are straight mountains and snow caps, and it's hard to put into words, but I'm hitting all 63. Mark my words. I'm hitting all 63. That's cool. For sure. So
you've done some like ultra training too?
Not ultra, but the Ironman.
Oh yeah, Ironman.
Yep. Ultra might be coming soon.
Yeah, okay.
But I just finished the Ironman a couple months ago.
How do you prep for that mentally?
I don't even know. There is no prepping for that, because when you're there, it's completely different. The preparation obviously is get a training program and, you know, follow
that. Explain
what
it is. So it's a swim, a bike.
1.2 mile swim, get out the water. Personally, I changed. I was like, fuck that. I want to be dry. People are getting
wet.
Oh yeah. So people wear one suit the entire time. Nah. So it's called a tri suit, and they swim in it, they bike in it, and they run in it. For me, this is my first one. I don't care about my time. Those are the people like the Goggins where they shit on themselves and stuff like that. Nothing is gonna slow them down from getting their time that they want to get, right? They compete for that. And me, this is my first one. It was more of a completion thing. I want to cross that finish line. That's my goal.
How long did you do it in?
6 hours and 40 minutes, I believe, with the transition time. So our transition times overall were like 25. But to put that in perspective, the guy who won the race, his transition times were a total of like 3 to 4 minutes. So the transition times is when you go from the swim to get on the bike and then pass that, like, you know, point where they start tracking you for the bike. Then you put your bike back and get to that point where you're running. 3 to 4 minutes. That's what I mean. So he's in the suit that he was swimming, and all he does is put socks and his bike on and connect to the, you know, the bike pedals, and he's gone. For me, I was like, hell no. I had a towel on. You thought I was just getting out the shower. I was like at the beach or something. Yep. Had a towel. I put all dry things on, which sucked because 30 miles on my bike was in the pouring rain.
Wow.
So I was soaked anyways, and I was better off in the shit that I was fucking swimming in because it was a little bit more water resistant, but I had like a nice like bike shirt on. But yeah, so it's a 56-mile bike and then a 13.1-mile run at the end.
Dude, just moving alone for 6 hours straight is
insane.
Serious.
Like the mental battle.
Just walking for 6 hours is hard. So imagine doing a 1.2-mile swim.
Yeah, nah. The swim was what I was most worried about, but it actually was the easiest in terms of physical.
So I would float for a mile. I would just float down the river.
Yeah, I wish it was a lazy river and could just fucking take me. But bro. Shit, I had to swim.
This is crazy.
It was crazy because when I'm training in the pool, or I trained a couple times at Cove, which I felt disgusting in, but I had my wetsuit on and I was training at Cove just to get in open water. But I was mainly in a pool, or I was with my brother at Cove. When you're at the race, there's thousands of people in the water with you. So I'm getting kicked in the face. Oh. I'm getting pushed to the side. Like, they didn't intentionally kick me in the face, but I mean, your head's down, right? You look up maybe to see where you're at or to get your breath. I got kicked in the face. I definitely like accidentally grabbed somebody's foot. I was getting kind of like almost like pushed, like get out of my way.
Yeah.
But it's difficult because you have to continuously look up in front of you to see where you're at.
Right.
And that obviously takes away from
your rhythm. And there's thousands of people?
Thousands of people.
Dude, this is a feeding frenzy for sharks. I'm telling you.
I know.
I mean, sharks should be there.
Thank God we did it in Atlantic. Thank God we did it in Atlantic City.
Dude, why do you keep saying that there are sharks in Atlantic City? Because, that's the Jersey Shore, bro.
I know, but because of the bay that we did it in. Guys, okay. So it wasn't like, you know, again, we were, I don't think so. I made it out alive. I made it out in one piece.
Yeah.
But me and my brother have talked about doing a full, and we want to do it somewhere like Hawaii or something like that.
That's a bucket list thing, huh?
Yeah, 100%. So I got the Ironman logo tatted, but I only filled it in halfway. So every time I look at it, it's telling me you can't fill this shit in until you finish a full. Mm-hmm. And that's my motivation. Because while I was training for the half, I told my brother, I was like, I'm never doing this shit again.
Right.
I'm going out for three-hour bike rides. And I'm like, this is it's terrible. It's boring. I was doing it by myself because our schedules didn't align. I was just like, I'd rather just be hooping. I could just go hoop with my boys for an hour. It's so much more enjoyable for me. But, you know, I set out for the goal. Yeah. But I told him, I was like, I'll never do this again. And then when I got done, I was like, all right, let's do a full. Because I finished a half and I'm like, yeah, I did a half Ironman. It's just like, you don't feel fulfilled, man. And a lot of people are like, dude, you should feel, and I do, I did. I feel accomplished. Yeah, I mean,
that's
proud.
That's a serious thing. Yeah. Like, that's not a joke.
No, no.
You know, you're at a very peak level of performance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just for your body to be able to 100%. Do that. Like, I'm in good shape, but I don't know if, I think the mile and a half, 1.2 mile swim. I think that would take me out. The bike ride I could absolutely do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the run I could do, but I'd be slow.
Yeah, yeah.
But the swim? Swim's for a tough. Mile, I mean, I smoke CV. We raced one time, probably 10 years ago.
Turn that mic on, my brother. I need to hear this story.
Turn that mic on, my brother. It's story time for you guys now. What does smoke mean? Bro, I smoked him, right?
What does smoke mean?
I beat him by 10, 15
probably,
yards?
No, probably like 7 inches.
Okay.
No. There's video footage. Millimeters. You know millimeters?
Nah, bro. Nah. Listen.
And not for nothing, you're like 6'7". I'm not.
6'7".
That's the only reason you beat me by millimeters.
Okay, whatever. We can run this back and we can get somebody to film. I can go find the footage.
I kind of want to be there.
So my thing is like smoked. I swim like an absolute bear, right? I'm just like my head's down. I'm never coming up.
It
for
feels
a
like he's fighting the water.
I'm just literally fighting the water, hammering the water. And all we did was swim one. Well, it was one length of the
pool. Honestly,
right?
It looked like a cartoon. You know when cartoons like do the whole thing and it looks like two windmills kind of going in the water. That's how he swims. He does not swim.
Ask about me back in camp days, bro. I was deep end. The entire time of camp, okay? So I don't want to hear it. A win's a win, right?
Win's a win.
Exactly. Mike off. Thank you very much.
Win's a win.
No, I didn't smoke him, but I talk a lot of junk, as you can see.
But you won.
That's right.
The swim, my brother started with that kind of, in a sense where he was kind of just slapping.
That's me.
It's slap all swimmer. About technique, and 80% of it is breathing. Like,
sometimes
once you get that
down,
man.
Sometimes I see these dudes are so smooth, and their heads come up, and they're like, just gliding through.
That's what they do. They glide. They glide, and it's just like this dude looks like he's putting in no effort.
Like
he's flying through the water.
Yeah.
Where me, I'm taking my first time. I got in the pool. Two laps, I'm out of breath. Like I just ran 40 minutes on the court.
When they finished the that race, he was sweating. You were in the water. My man was sweating.
Oh yeah.
That's how hard he went.
I was gliding
through the water, so I got there.
Yeah.
Like millimeters behind
gliding
him.
Gliding through.
But
the
no
water.
Sweat. My it was guy. Just effortless. my man was sweating like bricks. I'm like, what did you do? You work out in between?
Shit. You're a winner, right? All that matters is winning in life.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Nobody cares about second place.
As long as you get the W, it doesn't matter how you get it done.
Is there a specific quote that you? You live by a mantra of yours? I'm always curious.
There's one that has always stuck with me from my college baseball days. It was attitude, energy, and effort. Those are three things that you can control. So I tried to take that from sports and kind of implement it into my life. Again, we spoke about it earlier. There's a lot of things that are out of your control that you let bother you. And, you know, your attitude, your energy, and effort, as well as reactions to things, like those are things that you can control. And, you know, based on how you move forward with those, it can change the outcome of a lot of different things. So that's one right off the top that has stuck with me for sure.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. That's dope. Where can everybody find you?
At Real Das on all social medias, Instagram, TikTok. My TikTok's booming recently, but it's only on the bartending skits. So I'm a bartender as well. And I'm trying to cross over with the music and start to get like my music videos a little bit more traction.
Don't
but
worry. I kind of relate to that. I popped an egg back in 2020 with my bicep.
Your bicep.
Dude, this thing got 90 million.
Oh my God.
90 million views. Licenses have been bought for this.
Wow.
Like Ellen DeGeneres, America's Funniest Home Videos, all that.
Cracking an egg.
Try to convert it to podcast streams.
Doesn't happen. I swear.
So I'll forever be known as the egg guy. All right? This is what my life has become.
Bicep cracking egg, though, it could be worse. It could be known for worse things. But yeah. So at Real Das on all the platforms, Spotify, Apple Music, Das as well. And then Coach Das if you need some training.
Amen. I like that.
So
leave us with, I guess, somebody who's struggling in the mental health space, man. You know, I like what you had to say about that. It could be geared towards, you know, young athletes, or it could be geared towards, you know, anybody who's kind of listening. What you now know to be true after going through, you know, what you've gone through.
Yeah, I mean, very cliche, but it's okay not to be okay. And when I started to feel what I was going through, I thought something was wrong. And I thought that it wasn't okay to feel this way because I never have before. This doesn't make sense to me kind of thing. So... you have to kind of go through it, and you go through, you grow through what you go through, was another cool quote that just came to mind. But as I grew through these things, I became a better person. It didn't hinder me in any way where I thought it was at the time. It was crippling. And now I'm a stronger person. Now I'm more happy to be in the positions that I am because I went through that. So don't fear facing it. Don't fear facing your mental health or whatever you're going through. Don't be afraid to reach out for help ever. It's been a huge blessing to me to have people that are willing to even just listen to me. Even if I know they don't really understand, just them listening and me being able to get it off my chest. Mm-hmm. But also the biggest thing is find what works for you. Because as I was speaking to people, there were certain things that, you know, somebody was like, when I get anxious or when I'm going having a panic attack or whatever the case may be, this is what helps me. And I was trying those things and they weren't fucking working for me. So I had to kind of learn my own methods of healing or my own methods of making myself feel better, I guess you can say, at the time. So find what works for you and keep pushing and keep going.
I love
keep it. Going.
Thank you for coming on, my brother.
Thank you so much for having me.
Rooting for you.
I appreciate you.
And
thank you
I'm
so
happy
much.
To, you know, to establish this relationship with you and see where it goes moving forward. So,
yeah,
so thank you for your
absolutely.
Time. Thank you for sharing what you did. Mm-hmm. Guys, as always, we want to say thank you to you. We're very grateful for you, the listener. Whether you listen to one or 167, we appreciate you. It's the holiday season. Spend time with your friends, your families. Make memories because that's what's most important. Special thank you to Brandon. As always, you guys can shop the latest merch at nosnoozeshop.com. Get yourself one of those nice little beanies that Claudio, the voice Valenzuela, has on right there. So until next time, as always, stop snoozing.
Get up and get after it.
My man. Yo, can we go make a verse?
I got a couple open verses ready to go.
Thank you guys for tuning in. That's another Epi in the Books. You can follow us on Instagram at NoSnooze Podcast and leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to us. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, No Snooze. Shop the latest merch at NoSnoozeShop.com.